Tansi. Welcome to the Métis Voices Radio with your host, Dale Haggerty, speaking to you from the Najif Métis Museum, located in beautiful Raven Bee, British Columbia, Canada, every Friday night, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And now, sit back and relax and enjoy Dale Haggerty.
Tansi, welcome everyone. Apawa. It means it's mild here in our Michif word for the day. Tonight I have the privilege of introducing to me my guest, good friend, and Métis brother, Ron Kurse. Welcome, Ron.
Hey, Dale. How are you doing?
I'm doing very nice. I'm here
good.
Vancouver, in Surrey, on the Lower Mainland, so I'm just doing this for my friend, good friend, Derek White Sky Cloud's house. So I'm not too far from you right now. So
you're just across the river there.
There you go. There you go, Ron.
What's your wish is Red River?
Yeah. Call it the Fraser River.
Yes.
So, Ron.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you a few questions. Where are you originally from, Ron?
Well, Alberta, basically. Alberta boy here, Calgary, to be precise. And I've been living here in Vancouver since 1983. I was working for the oil patch there. I was working for British Petroleum. And back in the early 80s, the boom went bust, and you either went to Toronto or you came out here to Vancouver. So to me, it was a no-brainer.
Wow. I remember those days. I was in the construction industry, and we heard about the boom because, you know, the oil fields really made a difference. You know, when construction was good, that means the oil fields were really doing well.
Yeah. Yeah, I was... It sort of happened overnight. Everything was going along great, and then in the space of about 6 months, everything, Calgary just sort of turned into a ghost town all of a sudden. So it was pretty weird. So.
Yes, I remember those days because apparently, you know, I have cousins that live in Calgary. Actually, he's a second cousin, and he was in the construction industry, and they were building homes like crazy, and then all of a sudden... the contractor that he was working for went bankrupt, and he ended up that he couldn't pay my cousin. So what he had to do is he had to give him six homes that were unfinished and turn them over to him and to pay him off. And it was lucky because my cousin was a very smart businessman, and he actually capitalized on that fall that happened to a lot of people in Alberta. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of people left, but gosh, you go back to Calgary today, and wow, there's over a million people there now.
So, yeah, it really is. Can you tell us a little bit about your family life when you were growing up in Calgary?
It was, well, you know, we knew that we were Métis. Like, I knew from the Métis, my parents told me from the time I was a kid. But, you know, it was really weird. We were never allowed to talk about it. We were never allowed to talk about it. We were told that we were Scottish, you know, and I think it's because we have pale skin, you know, but we were never allowed to say Métis. I remember when I was 11 years old, I remember my mother overheard me telling one of my friends that we were Métis, and I remember her sort of grabbing me by the scruff of the neck, bringing me inside, and just up one side of me and down the other. I thought I told you not to tell people that, you know. So, but, you know, those were different times, you know. I remember in Alberta at that time, there was still a lot of stigma about being Métis. A lot of negative, people had a lot of negative feelings about Métis people, and also French people in Alberta at that time. A friend of mine went into a liquor store once, and he had a shirt that said Montreal on it. And, he got a real blast from one of the customers there. You know, so it was, there was a lot of, So there was not only towards Métis, but French people as well. So, you know, that was a Calgary of a different era, for sure. And I graduated from Bishop Carroll High School in 1975 and went on to Southern Alberta Institute of Technology, and I studied broadcasting there for 2 years, got my broadcasting diploma, and had great dreams of being a disc jockey and having my own radio show, and ended up going kind of from job to job because when I graduated, the job market in the broadcast industry wasn't very good then. Tried all over the place. I struck out, so I ended up working in offices for many years. And I ended up right to now where I'm working with Métis prisoners in the federal institutions here in British Columbia. And that was kind of it's funny where time brings everybody's lives, because I got doing volunteer work when I'd been living out here a few years, and I was working for several organizations who work with marginalized people. So, you know, people who are drug addicted, you know, people who are HIV and AIDS, Hep C, people who live on the downtown east side. And I actually found that I really enjoyed that. And so when the Métis community that I belong to, which is the Vancouver Métis Community Association, when they were asked to start working with Métis prisoners back in September 2002, when the call went out that we need someone to go in, I jumped at the chance and I got the job. So, and I really enjoy it still. So.
Yeah, so, listen, Ron. This is this is for our. We like to also welcome the guest on BBS Radio chat room, the Chatter Hall, and how to get there is how to listen is left of the page.
That's the title called How to Listen.
How to Listen. You hit How to Listen. You click on that, and it's left of on the page.
It'll say BBS Radio chat room.
It'll say BBS chat room. Then you might be getting some questions from people from all over the world, so we'll keep you up to date there. So
okay,
and you've got quite a little history here, like that I'd like to know, like when I know you were saying that, you know, was the area you grew up Métis community? Was it a Métis community?
Or no, it was right in Calgary. Yeah,
Métis community. Métis
community. Yeah, there you go. That's a Métis community there, believe it or not.
Trail.
Trail. Yeah, my good friend here also was a DJ when he was living in Alberta.
Yeah, I was in Red Deer.
Right in Red Deer there, he said.
I was a disc jockey up in Red Deer at the Red Deer Hotel.
Oh, yeah. Is that Derek? Yeah?
Yeah.
How long were you doing that, Derek?
did it for about 5 years with them.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and I actually wanted to get into radio, and when I came up to here, after Vancouver, I was with CFUN 1410, and then from there I moved on to internet radio.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Yeah,
I actually did a few for a practicum. I actually went on to CFAC Radio in Calgary, which is their country music station.
Ed Williams.
He was on the... On the TV side, I think on the radio side too. Come to think of it, I certainly remember Stampede Wrestling. I certainly remember that. Hello,
Foxy John on CFAC.
Ah, I remember Foxy John. I do. Yeah. So, in fact, I did a shift with him because we had to be there, and we had to have somebody who was overlooking what we were doing, so somebody who was regular staff, so, and he happened to be on one of the nights I was on, so that was pretty cool, and I remember getting phone calls while we were on the air from particularly it was guys who were listening to us while they were drinking in the bar somewhere. they call in with all these requests, and you know, so it's just in those days the big hit song was Heaven's Just a Sin Away by the Kendalls.
All your school friends, they were listening to you probably as you were, and they knew you were on the radio, so that's why they were probably phoning.
I'll bet you.
I think I was calling in for his girlfriend, or a girl was calling for her boyfriend, or they actually wanted to sing to the cows.
Yes.
Yeah. So where do you live now?
I'm right here in Vancouver. I live on Vancouver's east end, over where they call it Commercial Drive. So I live over near what they call the Drive, which is kind of like a bohemian area of Vancouver. So there's a lot of writers, a lot of artists, a bit of Little Italy. We have some people here from who live in the area from the Caribbean. So it's quite a mixture of people in this area. A lot of coffee houses in this area. So
yeah, that they're the Little Italy. I remember because I actually just prior to me getting married, I lived in that area, so we were quite familiar with. I grew up in Vancouver, these areas, like you say, Vancouver, you could just move anywhere, and there were beautiful communities where it was really safe and stuff like that. But
Yeah,
Little Italy, I remember living in that now.
Well, the mafia would actually protect you.
the little idiot mafia there that would protect you there, so for them, so. So how are you active in the Métis community? I heard you said that something about you're doing, working for the prisoners, and tell us a little bit about.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of history. Back in 2002, we were approached by a woman who works for Corrections Canada. She does now, anyway. Her name is Laura Baird. She's actually Cree Soto out of Saskatchewan, and she now lives on Tsawwassen Reserve. But she approached us for a government program called Section 84. Now, Section 84 is that it's when an Aboriginal inmate is coming up for parole, they have the right to ask for assistance from the community which they go to. So they usually requires them writing a letter to the community and, you know, saying who they are and, you know, where they're at and that type of thing. And then the community, if they decide to say yes, we're going to help you out here, and that's what it's about. Then a whole lot of people, like the community members, the corrections team, and the offenders, they all sit down and we devise a community plan of action for the offender when they get to the community. Like if, for example, if he has some drug issues, we can say that we would like you to go to NA meetings 3 times a week. Along with that, we'd like you to meet with a community elder 2x a week. We'd like you to attend a sweat at least 1x a week. You know, a lot of the offenders inside who are Métis, they don't know a lot about their culture. And so therefore they do that's probably why they feel lost. They're either adopted out at a young age, they've been raised by non-Aboriginal, non-Métis families, they've been orphaned or whatever, they've just lost all connection with their roots. And so it's a matter of trying to get them connected once more, from wherever they're from, whether it's from Manitoba or from, say, Kelly Lake up in northern BC or from Alberta. We try to get them reconnected. And a lot of them just don't even know where to begin. You know, like they'll say stuff like, I remember my grandmother telling us about our Métis roots, but that's all I know. I don't even know where to begin. No one in my family wants to talk about it. You know, so I don't even know where to begin. So it's always a challenge that way, to try to even start. So you got to start with things like, okay, do you know where your parents were married? What parish were they married? Because, you know, parishes keep records. And unfortunately, a lot of them burnt down, and all the records went with it. So so it can be a real challenge in Métis land to get people connected with their past. And that's really important, is that connection with the culture. But anyway, I digress. I've really gone off on a different thing here. But back to jumping back to Section 84 and how we got involved. So anyway, we were asked to come in, and we found out that our name was recommended by a body called the Vancouver Aboriginal Council at that time, and they were made up of about 30 different Aboriginal organizations around Vancouver and area that would meet every month or so. When Laura approached, she first approached them and said, you know, like, we have all these resources for First Nations guys, Métis guys, for Innu guys, but nothing for Métis. Can you recommend an organization? So they recommended us. She approached us. We took it to the board at that time, wrestled with it. They really did. They said, you know, we don't know anything about working with federal inmates. We know nothing about that. So what they did was they referred it up to the Elders Council in our community. Now, the Elders Council, there's five on there now, but at that time, I think it was three elders. And they wrestled with it, and they got back to the board of directors, and they said, okay, look, we can do this, but there's three things that have to happen if we're going to do this properly. Firstly, we need to partner with an organization that knows what they're doing, who can take us under their wing and show us the ropes, what to do, how to conduct ourselves in there, you know, what to do, what not to do, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Secondly, what we need is we need to be thinking about doing this 20 years from now, not just start this and then 2 years later or 3 years later or whatever, it's finished, you know. We have to eventually get some kind of a charity number or some kind of a way that we can keep ourselves financed, and not only with government funds but with other funds as well, so that 20 years from now we can still be doing this. That's very important. And they said the third condition was of the charity number in order to keep ourselves financed. So they put out the call, and like I said, I went and I applied for it. I got it, and because of my experience with working with marginalized people on a voluntary basis, and we ended up partnering with the John Howard Society Lower Mainland, and so we went with them. Together with them, we created this proposal that we sent to the Vancouver Foundation for some seed money to get this project going. And I'll tell you, I was working on that proposal, and there was a fellow, he's the executive director of John Howard Society Lower Mainland. His name is Tim Buresh. He worked on it too, so we combined our efforts, and we ended up with this, honest to Pete, it must have been about 5 inches thick, this proposal that we took over to the Vancouver Foundation to get seed money. I pity the poor person who had to read through that, because it must have been, you know, like 5 inches thick. I shudder to think how many pages that would have been. But we did get the money. We got almost $70,000 seed money to get the project started. And we used John Howard Society's charity number, because it was a partnership. And the, I remember John Howard saying to us, by the time that we're done, which will be in a little over 2 years, by that time you guys should have your own society up and going, and you should be able to carry on. And that's exactly what happened. Back in 2005, I believe it was, We got our charity number, and we became the Walk Bravely Forward Society. So, here we are, and you know, that's thanks to, like I said, John Howard Society, and we've had an awful lot of help throughout the time with Laura Baird and the staff at the Vancouver Parole Office, who've been really, really good to us. We have a really good working relationship with them, and just this week we got some money from the Anglican Church of Canada. And what that money is for is so that we can bring our elders into the institutions. And what that money will do is cover their transportation costs to and from. So so that'll cover us for this next year. And so that money is for them, for their transportation costs, so they can get in and see the inmates on a regular basis. So that's really good news. So we're really happy about that. So you know, things are slowly but surely kind of I don't want to say focused, because we are focused, but what we're doing is expanding right now the whole program. In the next 2 years, what I'd like to do is bring on a couple of other people. You know, raise the funds, bring on a couple of extra people to help out doing this, and then from there, where there's a couple of side projects that we're also looking at as well. We haven't quite formulated a complete idea about it yet, so I don't want to say too much about it, because things could be going one way and then suddenly veer off in another direction, but the next 2 years looks pretty exciting, with us expanding our program. So we'll see what happens this time next year. So,
I remember, Ron, and I can tell you that, you know, on my own experiences, I went into the prison system. I was invited through the Surrey Aboriginal Culture Society at that time, it was called, and they invited us to this powwow inside the prison camp up in just outside a mission. It's quite a ways, Hemlock Lake, I guess, area. I'm not too sure what the name of the institution was, but everybody knows about it, and they have a powwow there. And I can understand where your board of directors and your elders were really nervous, because me not being in a prison ever before, it's very eye opening. It's very how do you say that word?
It's a totally different universe.
It is, and you know what? It was, and I'll be honest, I was really scared.
There was only one time that I was really quite nervous, and that happened to be actually in one of the medium security institutions, and something went on, and this was a few years back. I was talking to one of the offenders in one of the main hallways, and these two guys come running by, two other inmates, and they go running down the hall and around a corner, and then this other guy comes by, and he grabs this guy that I'm talking with, and he says, "Hey, buddy, stick by me. Someone just tried to stab me," and off they go. And I'm kind of left there going, "What? What? Did I hear that right?" And then these first two guys, they come running back down the hall, and then they through a couple of doors, they come running back again. So I had no idea what was going on. It was just really, really just like, I think maybe I should make myself scarce here, type of thing. Like I said, that was a few years ago, when I first was starting. So that was kind of a strange introduction. but you carry on, because it is important, because, you know, as we all know, the Aboriginal population is really overrepresented in our federal institutions, and a lot of them, and I don't mean just a handful. I'm talking probably about half of them, in my experience, are Métis. Go ahead.
Sorry, Ron. I was just going to ask you a question. I mean, you know, I really feel for these inmates, and you know, me, I'm also a late bloomer, of course, of my history being held back. Unfortunately, I was at that age, about 42, 43 years old, when you know, the question came up, you know, we're Métis, and all of a sudden, you know, the whole world changed my whole outlook of life. I could imagine what these inmates are going through right now, and I don't know, what else is there for them in there? Is there some sort of, like, a program to try to help them find their genealogy, their history,
What it is you know, that's basically back to the community. That's basically up to us in the community to provide that. You know, the parole officers, they really, really try with what they've got. And, you know, unfortunately, the parole officers just don't have a lot of time. There's always a big turnover of parole officers because they get burnt out really quickly, because there's just so much work that they have to do. Like one parole officer could have like 40, 50 guys on their roster, you know.
They're not supposed to have them.
You know, they've got paperwork to do, and they've got reports to write every day. And, you know, and at the same time, they've got to, you know, keep, you know, abreast of what's going on with each individual guy, you know, or what their needs and wants are, you know. And so there's only so much that they can do, and this is where the community can come in and be a real help. In the Walk Bravely Forward Society, we've had a lot of people come forward. We've got a good, I would say, 24 people from our community who have been cleared through the Vancouver Parole Office and have their what they call their enhanced clearance. So they've gone through orientation, they've had their backgrounds checked, and they're given an actual plasticized card with their pictures on it and a barcode. And so they can actually go into the institutions at any time that any of us are going. We just have to let somebody know, like, each institution has a native liaison, and they also have a native elder. So we just have to let one of them know, or one of the parole officers know, that we're on our way. They can meet us there and bring us in, and, you know, we can sit down and talk to the people we need to talk to, like the inmates we need to talk to, or if there's a powwow going on or a brotherhood meeting going on, we can, you know, attend those, and we have attended those. Our elders have been doing lately is that when an inmate enters the institution, there's, depending on what their crime is, well, most of the guys have to take programs, you know, like a list of programs in order to cascade down to, like, if they're at a medium security institution, they have to take this bunch of programs in order to cascade down to a minimum security institution. So when these programs go on, there's always little graduation ceremony afterwards. It's like a congratulatory thing. Hey, you guys did it. You did good. So what our elders have been doing lately is they've been attending, like if there's any of the guys we're working with, they go and attend the graduation ceremonies that the guys graduate from, and they bring them a Métis sash and present it to them when they're there. And you should see the guys. It's just like, wow. You know, they're blown away. They're absolutely blown away by this. And it's like our elders say, well, you know, you've earned it. You know, you're on the right path. And this is to tell you that the community supports you in doing this, and keep on going on this path. You know, you're doing a good thing, not only for yourself, but for your community. And that's what it's all about, is community safety, first and foremost. That's what we're all about. And this is how we approach it, that it's up to the community to, when the one of the guys or the women reaches out for help, that we can be there and try to give them assistance as we can. But they have to do the work. You know, that's very important. That's one of the criteria that we have, is that the man or woman asking for the help, yes, we'll give it to you, but, you know, you have to do the work, and that has to be understood, you know, because it doesn't change when you get out to the community. It doesn't change. If you want to make a salary or make a wage, you got to go and work, you know. So it's just kind of a transferring of those things, kind of getting them, you know, into that mindset. And a lot of the offenders do, they respond favorably to that. There are some who won't listen, and so, you know, we have to basically say, well, sorry, you know, if you're not willing to do the work, we can't do it for you, you know. You have to. So we've had in the past what they have, what they call escorted temporary absences. So, and they usually happen when an inmate goes down to a minimum security. What happens there is for any kind of reason, for a work, for reasons of work, for reasons of education, even for cultural reasons, and this is where we have our big slant on, for cultural reasons, a fellow can request, I say fellow, I keep saying men and fellow because overwhelmingly we work with mostly guys. They can request a cultural ETA. So what that means is, even if he wants to come and just be with his community for a day, he can put in a request, because that's a valid reason, that he's meeting his community, he's being with people in his community. And what we do is make a day of it. We usually open our office. Guys have come in, they've just, you know, had coffee, and, you know, we've talked, gone for lunch, gone for coffee, just, you know, what kind of things are out there, where they want to go, what they want to do, that type of thing. We had some of the women come out from the Women's Institution 1 year for a November Remembrance Day ceremony at Victory Square, which is the main cenotaph down downtown Vancouver. That's where the big celebrations take place. And so they came out we met up with them, members of our community. They had their elder there, and they had a couple of staff members there. We met with them. We went to the ceremony. There wasn't any time, but we were going to go back to the office and have some tea and some sandwiches, but they didn't have the time. They had to get back to the institution. So, but, I mean, those are the types of things that can happen in an escorted temporary absence. It was important to them that they be with members of the community while they were out attending these ceremonies. So we were very happy to oblige that. So the other things that we've done, we've had when the Trout Lake was had their powwow on Mother's Day, where some of the guys went to that. We had the Celebration Métis down at Vancouver Art Gallery. 3 years in a row, we had guys come out from minimum security institutions, and then some of the women come in from women's halfway house and attended that. And that was a cultural ETA.
Were you there at that powwow this year?
Yeah, Ron, were you there at the powwow this year?
From what I understand, it didn't happen this year.
Oh, Mother's Day.
The Trout Lake. Apparently it didn't happen because there's construction work going on at the Trout Lake Center, where it was usually held.
It happened. They only had a one-day powwow.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay,
yeah,
I understood that it didn't happen at all.
They held it in the library, or another
gymnasium.
There was a gymnasium there.
Not in the ice rink like they usually do.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had to change it, but the powwow was much smaller, but they only had it for 1 day.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, yeah, I was told it didn't. Go ahead.
There's another one happening this weekend in New Westminster, just down the street at another school, not too far from the North Fraser Métis Association.
Oh, okay.
Edmonds and Canada Way.
Oh, okay.
3-day powwow, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Oh, so that starts tonight then?
Yes, it does.
Ah, excellent.
There you go. So yeah, you sounds like Ron, you've got quite a program going, and it really sounds like you guys look like you need some help out there. Are you looking for people to apply for positions or volunteers or?
Well, we always have volunteers, and of course our volunteers are fantastic, but of course they have day jobs too. We will be looking for extra people. What we have to do is raise the money first. Now, I've got proposals out to several foundations, and I've got I even got a couple of into the government. I don't know if they'll really go anywhere or not, but I do have some out to several foundations and several private enterprises. Who do give money to charity. So we're hoping that we will hear something from them by end of July, because I'm asking for, you know, basically $100,000, you know, to at least carry through for a year anyway. And and once we get that money, then we can start, you know, the process. So of hiring on. So.
Yeah, because like I said, you know, I'm very much involved with the Métis Machif Historical and Cultural Preservation Society, and of course, you know, Derek is one of our directors of culture there, and I'm thinking, you know, if these inmates sort of like had a program where we could, you know, I could send maybe Derek with somebody and to teach some of the barrier things about Métis life and stuff like that, and I know you got elders to do that, but you know, we're also available there too, you know, and
oh sure, you know, that'd be great, we can certainly talk about something like that at a future point, and the more help the better, that's for sure.
And of course, you know, Derek, he worked with the Métis Family Services as a spiritual leader, as well as he worked with some of the clients and helping them get their helping them through some of the tough times there. So, you know, Derek has the experience.
I worked at Surrey Pretrial.
Yeah, and Derek worked at a pre-trial, so
I helped helping the Métis men when they were in the Surrey jail, and helped them get them their way out. Yeah, I did that for a while.
So we're giving you a resume of Derek, so that's why he's looking for a job.
Okay.
Hey, Ron.
All right.
And you know I'm too far to come and travel. My Red River cart, I'm still looking for a good animal to take me on Highway Number 3. So,
oh, I see. Yeah, where is Davey?
So what else is in the agenda for this year? Like, I know you got lots of things happening. Tell us about the Vancouver community, Vancouver Métis Community Association. Is there things happening in there? And I know you're heavily in.
Go ahead. Oh well,
I know you're heavily in, but my good friend Paul Stevens, and I think he hit the jackpot again when the last time I was in the office. At least he was jumping like he was hitting the jackpot.
Oh,
so
he hit some gold.
What's happened is he has a junior mining company and called Sago Resources, and it's they're making some unbelievable finds in they have a in copper, silver, gold up in an area they have around Karamias, and
yeah.
It's Every time they go up there and they do some more what they call trenching, the results just get better and better and better. Like they, you know, Paul and his geologists there, they say, I can't believe we're finding what we're finding. That this is just amazing stuff. And and it's on Upper Similkameen land, so they're working very closely with the Upper Similkameen Band. And it could prove to be quite lucrative both for the band and Paul and for all who are involved in this. It certainly looks good. They're doing well on their stock, that type of thing. So they said this is the stuff that dreams are made of. You know, you just don't get results like this normally, you know, these good results type of things. So you saw it last time you were in the office there, Dale. Jumping all around, getting excited, and it was still that way yesterday. They had a bunch of geologists and in the office there, and they're all set to take everything up to the next level. And I guess that's where we're at in the Vancouver Métis as well as the Walk Bravely Forward Society. Everything's sort of getting set to go up to the next level. It's funny how cyclical things go. You know, you go along and you do what you do, and then all of a sudden things start to seem to plateau, and they're not really sort of going anywhere, or they don't seem to be. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get this influx of ideas, and you get this new batch of new blood in there, and they look at everything with fresh eyes, and they're going, hey, why don't we do this, why don't we do that, and they sort of just take it right along. So we're taking a break this year from Celebration Métis, just because all the volunteers that we had working on it are the same volunteers who've been working on it for the last 4 years, and they're pretty burnt out. We're taking a break this year. I was talking to Vancouver City Hall just the other day, and they've invited us that if we want to do this next year, to apply for funding again, because that's where we get the funding to put this on, is through Vancouver City Hall, and for cultural events, and they said they've invited us certainly to apply next year whenever we're ready. So things are, we're got ourselves a bit of a volunteer coordinator right now, and that's a volunteer position itself, and she's got a bit of time, and so she's right now putting together a bunch of job descriptions and stuff of things that are pretty much needed right now. We're going to start putting that up on the website, putting it in our newsletter and that type of thing. And that newsletter of ours, the Riel News, I was at Matt's Wee Institution a couple of weeks ago, and there was a lot of requests for it. Hey, we haven't seen the Riel News for a while. You want to bring some more in and that type of thing? So,
what's her name that was running? Was
Sue Didier?
No, not Sue Didier. Before her, was doing the news.
Who was doing the news? I know.
Was it Randy's readings or?
Who was
Rhonda's Ramblings. Rhonda's moved on to some other things. I know that she stopped doing that when she was, I think during the last provincial council election, she wanted to run for president. I think she placed third or something like that, but I think she's taking a break from everything. I think she had she went and adopted a child, her and her husband there, and so I think her total focus has been on foster care.
Is that how it works now in the Métis community? When you quit your job, you adopt somebody?
Adopt a Métis. Yeah, hey, we should do a program about that. Adopt a Métis, yeah.
know, they're always at Métis Family Services. Of course, you know I'm a board of directors there as well. Or, but always the girls are always looking at me and going, when are you going to adopt one of our little kids? And I keep saying, I'm getting too old for the little kids, do you see? Fine, yeah, so. Yeah, it's a lot of work that you guys are doing. You know, I had to pop in that one day because, you know, I am a member of the Vancouver community, Métis community, and I really enjoy what was going on, but I was sort of like, I'm sort of like this person that was, I didn't know what was going on because, you know, things are being changing. Everything's changing. I mean, I've got a lot of stuff that I do on my agenda myself. Like, you know, I plan to go to rendezvous and I set up museums and schools up in my area, see? But, you know, some of the stuff that was really concerning me, and I don't know if you can even talk about this because of, you know, like the hunting, for example. You know, we hear this news that, you know, we're getting all these rights of hunting and then, and when I go to find things out that we aren't entitled to the same things as the other Métis that we call the other Métis that is trying to take over and do things for us, but and so that's why I sort of like, you know, like to talk about what the other communities are doing, and yours is like, you know, there's a lot of things are happening in our area here, but. Yeah. A lot of people know about it, you see, and
if I can make a suggestion for a future show for you guys, if you could have our captain of the hunt, Marshall Lowen, on, and he can address that. He can address what's going on because that guy knows everything, like the back of his hand, and he could tell you everything in the hour and more about. What to do, where to go, how to get this, how to get that. He's a real expert, and he's had years and years experience doing what he's doing, and he's an excellent talker as well. He's an excellent talker, so I could ask him for a future show if you like. Because he would be able to address exactly that type of thing, the hunting and the fishing rights. He would be able to address that right down to the nth degree. So,
you remember about the Pauley case?
Yeah.
Okay, I heard some of the grapevine was around even through the, you know, people are saying within the government itself, they're saying that, or I guess we say the provincial government is trying to say that Pauley really was not a Métis.
He is Métis, or he was Métis. He's passed on now. But what we understood, the information we got was that the Pauley case is only Ontario specific because he was from Ontario, so it's only in Ontario.
So
those rights that Pauley got. From what we understand, are only apply to the Métis living in Ontario. This is what we understand.
Sounds like each province only has a certain rule.
Yeah, and see, again, Marshall would be able to address that more specifically. Yeah, like you could do a whole show just on that subject alone. and interestingly enough, Pauley was a member of Congress of Aboriginal People, not Métis Nation, not Métis National Council. Interestingly enough.
So, how political are we in terms of and rights and stuff? Have we? As a community, I'm sorry, Ron, I shouldn't be asking you this because I know you don't like talking about politics but you're our voice out there for our Métis community in Vancouver, and it's important that, you know, that I believe that, you know, everybody that says, you know, I'm having problems trying to get my Métis card, well, the first thing that I always say to them is,
you know, why don't you go see, why don't you go see the people at the Vancouver Métis Community Association downtown, and I always give them their numbers. Can you tell us how you, what, why, what the criteria is if you wanted to be a, if you thought you were Métis, and what the process would be to becoming a member of our organization?
Okay, in our community, what it is we go by the old Alberta Métis definition, like the old one, which says you have to self-identify, you have to be an accepted member of a Métis community, and you have to be somewhere of Aboriginal heritage. And that's what we still go by. That's what we've gone by from the beginning when we became a registered Métis community in 1995, and that has not changed. When someone comes to us, you know, we do like to have a genealogy, but what we're looking for is your link to your Aboriginal ancestors. So your genealogy plus long-form birth certificates, which you can get from any Department of Vital Statistics in any of the capital cities, provincial capital cities in Canada. Or even in case of adoption, people have presented us copies of written statements on government paper that stated that even though it didn't mention name, all it says is that their birth mother was, say, Métis from Isle across Saskatchewan, and their father was an Englishman. Their birth father was an Englishman, you know. Anything that's kind of an official document like that. The problem is, you know, a lot of the phone calls we get. I talked to Tyler there, you know, Tyler in the office there, he takes a lot of the phone calls, is people who phone and they can only get so far in their genealogy or their looking for their history, and they don't know where to begin. They've kind of hit brick walls, they sort of can't get beyond it, and they're looking for help. So we do have a list in the office of various websites they can go to. The Glenbow Museum in Calgary actually has an incredible list of Métis names, family histories, just an amazing list. And believe it or not, the Mormon Church in Utah also has an incredible list of not necessarily Métis, but Aboriginal families. Yeah, throughout North America, because they believe that the North American Aboriginal people are one of the seven lost tribes of Israel. So that's why they keep close tally on all the Aboriginal names, the families, the clans, who belongs, that type of thing. So that's a little used resource. So
So anyways, Ron, so if somebody is looking for their Métis card,
yeah,
what's the phone number that they should be needing to phone your office? Would you mind giving it out on the radio?
Oh, not at all. It's 604-682-2933. And you can talk to Paul or Tyler or me when I'm there.
There you go.
A lot of times I'm out in the institutions or I'm out at community meetings, but when I'm there, I'll pick up the phone and you can talk to me too. So
there you go. Well, Ron, my friend, thank you very much for being on our Métis Voice Radio program. We really enjoyed our visit with you and valuable information that you provided us, and you're right. We will try to see if we can get a hold of Marshall Lowen to talk about hunting and some of the rights here. So, thanks, Ron.
Well, thank you guys for having me on.
I would like to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in, and our directors and sponsors of the BBS Radio for allowing us to present this program to you. This week, Friday, May 23rd, we look forward to having our guest, renowned Métis singer and performer, Brenda McIntyre, Medicine Song Woman. Please tune in next week, same time, starting at 7:55 p.m. Standard Time. Have a good week. Take care. Until then, merci. Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Dale.
$5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.